what we are starting to see is more intelligent energy use. Doesn't necessarily mean it's more efficient, but it's more intelligent simply, you know, from a cost perspective. So time of day, increasingly as we get more renewables, will be the number one determinant of what your power bill looks like, which people will be starting to pay on a time of day basis.
Welcome to The Green Away. I'm your host, Rosemary Petras, Senior Journalist at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land and we pay our respects to traditional custodians of country and elders past, present and emerging. Joining us today is David Scaisbrook, co-founder and managing partner of Quinbrook Infrastructure Partners. With over 28 years in energy and renewables infrastructure, David leads Quinbrook's strategy in advancing green decarbonisation and renewable energy projects globally. Welcome, David.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
David, with energy efficiency highlighted as a global priority at COP29, how can asset managers align their strategies to meet these new international standards?
Energy efficiency has never in the past been a large asset class for investment, if you like. It has become and probably still is to a large extent behavioural and also regulatory in the sense that we need to incentivize people to conserve energy and to shift their behaviour in terms of the times of day. What we are starting to see is more intelligent energy use. Doesn't necessarily mean it's more efficient, but it's more intelligent simply, you know, from a cost perspective. So time of day, increasingly as we get more renewables, will be the number one determinant of what your power bill looks like, which people will be starting to pay on a time of day basis. Going forward, though, I think at very large scale, it's mostly technological. So if you look at, you know, some of the incentives that we've seen under instruments like the US Inflation Reduction Act, there are direct financial incentives that create drivers for new investment in larger scale, you know, energy efficiency, particularly in things like electric motors, and heat is one of the larger applications, and the electrification of heat with more efficient technologies. I think in those areas, particularly with what we call distributed energy solutions, which really are, you know, smaller scale, but really are behind the meter solutions that are inside, let's say, high residential apartment buildings, large-scale residential communities with new development, new real estate development. These are the sorts of areas where I think we do have to up our game in terms of more efficient appliances, and that should be a mandatory requirement on new builders and new developers.
So how is Australia rising to the challenge of grid stability and renewable integration?
Australia, I think, is reasonably advanced from a regulatory and rule setting perspective. AEMO has been really quite progressive when we compare it to other jurisdictions in, you know, imposing new requirements such as grid forming inverters, which is a technical thing, but at the end of the day, it helps renewables work with the grid. When you have challenges in harmonics and frequency from changes in weather, and you get a lot of production from solar and wind, and then all of a sudden immediately you don't. That's not how modern power systems were originally designed. So, you know, AEMO in Australia has required the adoption of that almost now as a mandatory requirement. So that's a good thing. And of course, technology has caught up with that. As we get more and more renewables penetration and we start to see the closure of more coal and gas-fired power stations in Australia, we will have to adopt, I think, what we see in the United Kingdom, where we've been quite active in investing in things like synchronous condensers, which most people won't know what they are, but essentially they're large spinning flywheels that replace the inertia that's lost in a power system, like a shock absorber. When you lose those big spinning generators that we find in coal and gas-fired power stations, and so, you know, we are the largest developer and owner of those machines in the United Kingdom to provide grid stability. I think you'll find more of those installed in select areas of the Australian grid in order to provide that stability. You know, going forward, we are continuing to see advances in long duration energy storage. And I think longer duration batteries teamed with grid forming inverters, will in the near term, you know, provide part of the solution. But overall, I think we're reasonably technically savvy. I mean, you know, Australia does have some of the most stringent rules in the world in terms of our generator performance standards. By any measure, we are one of the most strictest regulatory markets in terms of the standards that we insist upon in order for a new generator to connect to the grid. Of course, as technology evolves, more will be done and will need to be done. Overall, I think we're managing just at this point in time.
Let's now turn to data centers. What are the main challenges with energy consumption and the opportunities for decarbonization, particularly with the rise of AI?
Look, I think the biggest, you know, we're deeply involved in this, and I'd say the biggest issue is just the pace at which everything is happening. I mean, we're dealing now with the onset of algorithmic processing inside data centers for a slew of AI applications. And it wasn't that long ago when ChatGPT was first introduced, and no one really foresaw, probably outside of the Amazons and the Googles of the world, this proliferation of the use of these technologies, but more importantly, the energy intensity of not only the programs and the energy that they consume, but the scale at which the data centers need to operate at. And, you know, here in Australia, we don't have any data centers that are anything close to what we're building in the United States. I mean, I think our first, to give you a sense of it, our first campus in Maryland is equivalent to half of all of the data center capacity of the entire country of Australia. So that's just one campus. So the US is in a whole nother league. But here in Australia, given our small population, we won't face the same acute and near-term challenges, but there will be challenges. And I think we will start to see campuses developed in Australia that are located in places that can access renewable energy at very large scale without necessarily impacting, you know, the grid or the demand for electricity of other industries and consumers in particular. That's one of the biggest concerns, particularly in the United States. Here we do have a challenge of grid investment and increasing investment in transmission system. We have policies in place like Powering Our Nation, which is, I think, a $20 billion policy announcement about increasing our grid transmission capacity. We have the land, which a lot of places don't. We have that, but we really need the high voltage transmission grid. We're blessed with renewable energy in this country. It's one of our greatest endowments. So I think it won't be as an acute a challenge. It will still be a challenge, but we're in a better position to solve it than most countries, particularly if you compare us to the UK or Singapore. For example, that's really struggling with this. They just don't have the land mass and they don't have the same renewables resource to solve it.
In your assessment, David, how do Australian data centers compare globally?
Well, firstly, they're a lot smaller than what we're seeing being built these days in the United States, but you are seeing larger data centers being constructed in Australia. Historically, you know, and really they're still relatively current, data centers have been inner urban installations, and that's because the scale of them meant that they were largely connected at the sort of the distribution grids, you know, on the fringes of the city, like in the western suburbs of Sydney is one of the biggest data center locations in Australia. And we've also had limited cable connections, you know, and now that's proliferating and we're getting connections in the west of Australia. We're getting more connections now on the east coast of Australia. So we have more options. And you know, I'd say, you know, we are led by the designs and configurations that we're seeing adopted by the hyperscalers in the United States in particular. A lot of the data center technology and evolution of data center design, cooling systems, and a lot of the intellectual property around making data centers more efficient and more sustainable really does come from a lot of the work that's going on in the United States, which is sort of the epicenter of the global data center industry. You know, in Quinbrook's case, we've recently introduced sustainable building approaches, green cement, greener steel, fabrication techniques to reduce the carbon footprint of our latest hyperscale build by, you know, nearly 30%. And that's ways that we can make a contribution to the sustainability of data centers at larger scale, you know, quite apart from just powering those data centers with renewable energy. There's also sustainable options that you have in the construction, choice of materials, the design of the site, particularly wastewater cooling, location of the equipment itself, the use of ambient cooling. These are all things that go into the total equation. But I'd say Australia is an early adopter, but we're still very dependent primarily on some of those innovations that we're seeing, you know, driven primarily out of the US.
Well, David, thank you so much for your time today. Where can listeners find out more about your work?
Well, I think we're just about to revamp our website in about a month's time, but quinbrook.com and also LinkedIn. And there's a few podcasts that our team and myself have done over the last, you know, year or so. So I think there's a fair bit out there. We are a private capital manager, and so, you know, a lot of the work that we do is not public, but we do for the benefit of our investors and our stakeholders. You know, we do announce our projects from time to time. So there's also a link from our website. Anyone can get in touch with us, and, you know, we try to make it a priority to respond as best we can.
Until next time then, I'm Rosemary Petras, and thank you for listening to The Green Away.
Thank you, Rosemary. Thank you for having me.
The Green Away podcast is a product of FS Sustainability, a show about people, the planet, and investing in our collective future. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. The Greener Way podcast gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by discussing numerous financial sustainable options and our featured guests. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of The Greener Way are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement, and if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.